A question of exchange. Let's do something we've never done before, said William.
We've done everything, said Ginger. We've had a seaside show and an animal show and a nightclub.
We've not had television, said William.
Well, we couldn't have that, said Douglas.
I bet we could, persisted William. I've seen television, and it's only people's heads carrying on, acting and such like, in a little hole. I bet we could easily make a little hole and have our heads in it, acting and such like.
Yes, but what do we do? Asked Henry.
We'll do a sort of play, said William.
What'll it be about? Asked Ginger.
Well, we've got to have a bad man and a good man, said William. You've always got to have those two in a play.
And a girl, said Ginger.
No, we're not having a real girl in it, said William firmly. They mess everything up. One of us will be the girl. All you've got to do to be a girl is to put on a sort of silly look and one of Ethel's hats. I'm not going to be the girl, he added hastily.
Neither am I,
said Ginger, Douglas and Henry simultaneously.
I'll be the good man, said William.
I'll be the bad one then,
claimed Ginger immediately.
Who'll I be? Said Douglas.
You can be the good man's old father, said William. He thinks his son's been killed by the bad man and he turns out alive after all. He's only been stunned.
And who'll I be? Said Henry.
You be the policeman. He comes with the good man to rescue the girl when the bad man's got her kidnapped and all tied up in an attic.
Yes, but who's going to be the girl? Said Douglas.
It was at this moment that Violet Elizabeth Bott appeared at the doorway of the old barn. She looked at them from beneath her mop of curls.
Can I come in, please?
No, said William. Violet Elizabeth came in and gazed at them with a seraphic smile.
What you doing?
She asked.
Nothing, said William. You get out.
She smiled still more seraphically. Violet Elizabeth always seemed to thrive under insults and rebuffs.
Can I play too, please?
No, you jolly well can't, said William.
She's a girl, Ginger reminded him, and we want a girl.
They all looked at Violet Elizabeth, who continued to smile at them seraphically. They knew her to be unreliable, fickle, and utterly unsportsmanlike, but, as Ginger had reminded them, they did want a girl. William fixed her with his sternest frown.
Will you do just what you're told? He said.
Yes, of course I will, William,
promised Violet Elizabeth glibly.
Well then, you've got to act a girl what's been kidnapped by a bad man and then rescued by a good one.
Is it a charade?
No, it's not a charade, mimicked William. It's television.
What's television?
Said Violet Elizabeth.
Don't you know anything? Said William.
Yes,
smiled Violet Elizabeth.
I know lots of things. I bet I know as much as you. I bet you don't know who discovered America. I do. I saw it on a cigarette card.
Yeah, well, never mind that. We're talking about television now.
What's television?
Demanded Violet Elizabeth again.
Well, it's heads acting in a sort of hole, said William.
A sort of what?
A sort of hole. They just sort of make up a tale and act it in a sort of hole.
It sounds silly,
said Violet Elizabeth judicially.
Snot, retorted William. It sounds all right to people what have got a bit of sense. People pay lots of money just to have one of these things with heads acting in a sort of hole.
All right,
agreed Violet Elizabeth sweetly.
What shall we act?
Well, that's just what we're fixing up now, said William. And if we let you come in too, you got to do just what you're told to do.
Course I will,
said Violet Elizabeth even more sweetly.
I always do.
The television show was arranged for the following afternoon. A clothes horse had been borrowed from Ginger's kitchen and an old sheet hung across it. A convenient hole in the middle of the old sheet had been enlarged till it could contain two heads at fairly close quarters. It was a jagged, uneven hole, but, as William pointed out, it would be a change from the usual bore-in-square one. The Outlaws had decided not to charge any entrance fee to their new show. This was due less to generosity than to a conviction that otherwise it might not be patronised at all. The juvenile population of the village had almost completely wrecked the outlaw's last show on the grounds that it wasn't worth the halfpenny charged for it. The audience turned out to be a fair-sized one, for the outlaw shows could generally be trusted to provide some little excitement, even if not always the sort intended by their organisers. Arabella Simpkin was, as usual, the chief agitator. Adenoid Arabella always came to the outlaw shows and was always the first to demand her money back. She was feeling slightly aggrieved. Because the show was free, it would be impossible to make that particular protest. She sat now in the front row, holding a bag of monkey nuts and decked out in her best, having borrowed, unbeknown to her mother, the pride of her mother's wardrobe, a long, raggy, once white feather boa, always referred to by her mother as me fur. Arabella made great play with it, flinging the long ends over her shoulder, wrapping it several times round her neck, swinging it round and round and to and fro. There came the sound of whispered colloquy behind the old sheet. Violet Elizabeth had not yet turned up. William wished now they'd had a play without a heroine. The one they'd made up hadn't had much of a heroine till Violet Elizabeth got hold of it, and after that it had little else. At last, 5 minutes after the time the performance was due to have started, here was Violet Elizabeth entering the barn door with a flourish. A sister of her mother's was spending the day with them, and Violet Elizabeth had crept into her mother's room and appropriated the hat and fur that her Aunt Maggie had left on the bed. It was a small straw hat with a flower and an eye veil, and Violet Elizabeth wore it at a jaunty angle. The fur was a small mink necklet. Violet Elizabeth stopped and looked at Arabella, who flung one end of the long feather boa over her shoulder and cracked a monkey nut at the same time. Suddenly, Violet Elizabeth yearned with all her might to throw the end of a long fur over her shoulder. The mink necklet was no use. It was short and unthrowable. It seemed suddenly wholly unsuitable for a heroine.
"I like your fur so much," she said sweetly to Arabella.
Arabella glanced at Violet Elizabeth's fur. There was an expensive look to it. Her interest was tinged with envy. "Yours isn't so bad," she admitted grudgingly.
"Let's swap,"
suggested Violet Elizabeth.
"I don't mind,"
said Arabella, hiding her pleasure beneath a show of indifference. Violet Elizabeth quickly took the long feather boa and flung the end round her neck with a flourish as she went behind the screen. Arabella fastened the mink necklet at the back of her neck and assumed an expression which appeared to be one of acute nausea, but which was, in reality, an attempt to look like Greta Garbo. The television show was over. It had not been an unqualified success. Violet Elizabeth and the feather boa had taken up so much room in the hole that hero, villain, policeman and hero's father had been practically invisible. Violet Elizabeth had insisted on having her head in the hole all the time and hardly letting anyone else speak.
"It was a rotten show," said Arabella at the end.
"Yes," shouted another member of the disgruntled audience. "It was nothing but an old girl throwing a fur about. Call that a play?"
Violet Elizabeth, seeing that she was becoming unpopular with both her fellow actors and her audience, flicked the end of the boa over her shoulder and walked haughtily to the door.
"I certainly won't act for you again," she said. "Not if you ask me to, on bended knee."
And she flounced off down to the road. A large car had drawn up there, and a man with a red, round, jolly face got out and made his way past Violet Elizabeth towards the old barn. Curiosity fought with pride in Violet Elizabeth's breast, and pride won. She threw the end of the feather boa over her shoulder once more and set off quickly homewards. The man in the large car was Uncle Charlie. Uncle Charlie was a well-known conjurer who was on his way to a music hall engagement in Hadley. He feared he was on the wrong road and had stopped to make inquiries at the old barn. It turned out he was on the right road after all. In fact, he had a couple of hours to spare, and being constitutionally unable to resist the temptation of a ready-made audience, he decided to entertain this one. Meanwhile, As Violet Elizabeth entered the hall, she heard her mother and Aunt Maggie in the drawing room pleasantly discussing their mutual friends. The loss of the fur and hat had evidently not been discovered. Violet Elizabeth ran upstairs and laid the hat and the feather boa carefully on her mother's bed. A fur was just a fur, she decided, and probably Aunt Maggie wouldn't remember that it was a small brown one she'd left, and not a long white one. Then Violet Elizabeth's curiosity triumphed over her pride. She decided to forgive her audience for not appreciating her acting, and she returned to the old barn to find out what the man with the red round jolly face was doing there. A few minutes later, Aunt Maggie was standing in Mrs. Bott's bedroom, holding the feather boa at arm's length and surveying it with an expression of frozen horror. "My fur's been stolen," she said dramatically. "And this left in its place." Mrs. Bott sat down weakly on the bed. "That was a really valuable fur," said Aunt Maggie. "And look what's been left in its place. I'm going straight to the police about it. Where's the police station?" Mrs. Bott distractedly gave her the directions. Aunt Maggie rammed her hat on her head and left the room at a run. As she turned out of the hall gates, she ran into another woman who was hurrying along the road. It was Arabella's mother, enraged at the discovery that me fur had been stolen and a nasty little brown thing left in its place. They exchanged their remarkably similar experiences. "How very odd," said Aunt Maggie. "There must be a gang at work." "Right down below me waist me fur came," went on Arabella's mother, "and the bit of rat skin they left only just meets round me neck." Together they entered the police station and poured out their story. The policeman scratched his head and looked bewildered. "There may have been other cases that haven't been reported yet," said Aunt Maggie. "Have any strangers been seen in the village?" "Well, now," said the policeman with rising interest. "It's a funny thing, but I have heard of a stranger only a minute ago. I was just going to look into it when you two come along." The story of Uncle Charlie had quickly spread and grown until he had become an entire troupe of disreputable circus performers who were indulging in some kind of wild orgy in the old barn. "We'd better all go down there now," said the policeman. "You better go and fetch those old furs they left. That's evidence against them. You meet me there, that'll be best." And Aunt Maggie and Arabella's mother scurried off. Despite the loss of her precious mink, Aunt Maggie was feeling oddly pleased and excited. Mrs. Bott came down the stairs as she rushed into the hall.
"Well, dear, what do they say?"
asked Mrs. Bott.
"Oh, it is a gang," said Aunt Maggie mysteriously. "The police know just who's done it. We're going to confront them now. Oh, you haven't a revolver you can lend me, have you, dear?"
No, Mrs. Bott hadn't a revolver. She suggested a poker or a table knife.
"Oh, no, dear, I'm afraid it must be a revolver or nothing," said her sister. "If the worst should come to the worst, my will's in the second drawer of my bureau, underneath the tea cosy I'm knitting for Fanny's birthday. Ooh, and now, dear, I must fly."
She ran upstairs, snatched the feather boa from the bed, and ran downstairs again.
"If I don't return within an hour, get in touch with Scotland Yard," she called, as she vanished from sight down the drive.
As Aunt Maggie entered the old barn, she saw at the farther end, in the middle of a crowd of children, including the outlaws, a large fat man. His sleeves were rolled up, and he was showing his audience his open hand.
"Now, I'm going to cover my hand with this handkerchief. Nothing in the handkerchief, notice?"
Aunt Maggie turned and saw the policeman standing near her. His mouth hung open. He was watching Uncle Charlie's every movement intently.
"Now, watch very carefully," went on Uncle Charlie.
Aunt Maggie turned in the other direction and saw Arabella's mother holding the precious mink carelessly in one hand. Her eyes, too, were fixed on Uncle Charlie's handkerchief.
"Well, I never,"
said Aunt Maggie indignantly, and snatched the fur. Arabella's mother glared at her, and then snatched suddenly at the feather boa.
"Well, of all the sauce," she said. "Now watch very carefully," said Uncle Charlie.
There was a tense silence. Uncle Charlie slowly removed the handkerchief.
A white mouse sat upon his palm and trimmed its whiskers.
The audience, and especially William and the outlaws sitting at the very front, were enraptured.
"Coo!" said the policeman amidst the applause. "Isn't it wonderful?"
Then he suddenly caught sight of Aunt Maggie and Arabella's mother.
"Yes, ladies," he began. "Yes, about them furs."
"Be quiet," said Aunt Maggie. "He's going to do another trick."
Yes, kindly be quiet," echoed William, and muttered in an enthralled undertone to the other outlaws,
"Gosh, it's better than television."